It's time to have lunch and talk sports. It's the Midday Sports Zone on Middle Georgia's ESPN.
Happy Tuesday. Welcome into the Midday Sports Zone. Russ Brown, Daniel Shirley with you. We're in a good mood. How much fun was that? Braves beat the Dodgers in Game 1. We'll have plenty of reaction to that. More Falcons talk as the fallout from the firings of Dan Quinn and Thomas Dimitroff continues. We'll have some UGA Georgia, of course. Georgia-Alabama, I should say, talk, of course. Three guests on the rundown today. Aaron Suttles will join us. He covers Alabama for The Athletic. Then Matt Michelle will jump in. He is the national writer for college football at the Orlando Sentinel. And we'll do a little vroom vroom with Jordan Bianchi at 12:30. Obviously, we start with the Braves win over the Dodgers last night. And as I've said throughout these playoffs, this team has made me a believer, namely Ian Anderson and Kyle Wright. Anderson will pitch tonight. I didn't think the Braves had the starting pitching to really compete in the postseason. And they have absolutely shown us otherwise in their six playoff wins. They're undefeated in the playoffs so far. And last night was what we have seen from this baseball team for seasons now. A team that does their best, plays their best baseball late innings. They scored four runs in the top of the ninth. We saw a team that halfway through the season last year did not have a very good bullpen. Luke Jackson was the closer for this team. He's not on the playoff roster, by the way.
That's crazy, isn't it?
Say it out loud. Luke Jackson. And Alex Anthopoulos, obviously, through the trade deadline in the 2019 season and in the offseason, fixed the bullpen. And basically, what you're seeing is a team and a roster that has evolved, developed, and built itself up to being just like the Dodgers and the Braves, they're the same team. I mean, it's like watching the same team. The difference is I think the Braves play looser. They were dancing in the dugout, having a good time before the game. It's like we said, there's just something about this team. They have fun playing baseball. The chemistry is incredible. It has been ever since Ronald Acuna Jr. and Ozzy Albies showed up. And it's just a matter of growing and developing and fitting the right pieces like Marcell Ozuna and Travis DeNard in around them. And that's what the Braves have done, and it was on full display last night. Austin Riley, it was so cool to see him get that big hit in the top of the ninth inning. I remember watching this kid play at Rome. First time I saw Austin Riley, I thought, man, they're going to have to trade him. That's a first baseman right there. But he's evolved, and he did have I guess he didn't get charged with an error last night, but I felt like he made an error at third base last night. But he hit the big home run in the top of the ninth. Ozzy Albies followed it up. And it's a team that is fun to watch and a team you can believe in too, Daniel. I go back to the top of the eighth inning, and it was frustrating because the Braves have a hard time getting runners in scoring position.
Is it John Smoltz doing the?
Oh, I don't know. I was listening to the radio.
I couldn't tell if it was Smoltz or not. But even the guy, the color guy last night, whoever it was, said these are the situations where the Braves have struggled this season. They're not good with runners in scoring position and less than two out.
Yeah, it's a problem, and it's a modern day baseball problem. Sure. Because the way the game's played now. It's incredibly frustrating to watch at times, but it's also a lot of fun to watch, like in the top of the ninth. But in that eighth inning, you had the Braves. I mean, look, in the top of the sixth was one that got by. I mean, you get your first two runners on with nobody out, you should score. Dansby Swanson, they bring in a reliever that Swanson's never faced. Christian Pache is batting behind him in the order because Duvall is out with the injury, and Dansby pops out on the first pitch.
Swings at the first pitch and swings weakly at the first pitch.
I mean, I'm sorry, man. In baseball, when you get the first two runners on in an inning, you should score. Yeah. And the Braves don't do a great job of that, but nobody does. Nobody in baseball does anymore.
No doubt. That's not a Braves problem. That's a baseball problem.
And as we've said all along, eventually some franchise, I think it's the Marlins, is going to go all in on baseball people and have a lot of success doing it. But that happened in the sixth. The bullpen continues to do a great job. Freed, a little shaky early on. He did make the one mistake to Kiki Hernandez, but I thought after the third inning, he really settled in, and he got the team through six. The bullpen does its job. But the top of the eighth, for me, again, Ozuna doubled to lead off the inning. You should score. You have a man on second with nobody out. You should score. Darnell grounds out to third, can't move the runner over. Then Ozzy strikes out. And then I think this is where the Dodgers really screwed up. They decided to intentionally walk Dansby Swanson with two outs. Okay. So now what you've done is you've guaranteed that Ronald Acuna Jr. is going to bat in the ninth inning when you do that. Then Pablo Sandoval, and look, they wanted to go after Pache, I get it. But again, this goes back to Alex Anthopoulos. When he signed Pablo Sandoval, it wasn't a move we talked a lot about, but it was for situations like this. Switch hitter comes in late in the game with a runner in scoring position and two outs. Well, he gets hit by a pitch. So now, all of a sudden, you've got Ronald Acuna Jr. and Freddie Freeman coming to the plate. And then in the next at-bat, Charlie Culberson strikes out swinging. Braves bullpen does its job in the top of the ninth. Bottom of the ninth inning comes around. Guess you really didn't need Freeman and Acuna because Austin Riley hit one 647 feet. That was really 430.
430, my patoot.
And the rest is history. Acuna doubled, and Freeman moved him over with a sack fly. Marcelo Ozuna singled in Acuna. It was 3-1, and you felt really good about life. And just to make it extra sweet, Ozzy Albies piles on with a homer of his own. The Braves go up 5-1, and the rest is history.
But look, I mean, even, you know, again, we were talking about them not coming through with runners in scoring position and less than two outs, but Ozuna does.
Yeah, they did.
Oh, was there two outs when he did that?
Yeah. There were. There were two outs.
Ozuna comes through, man.
That was clutch.
And it wasn't a bomb. It was just a baseball play. And, you know, I know Freddie wasn't doing this on purpose, but Freddie hits a ball to deep center field. And Acuna can go from second to third. He doesn't score there.
Yeah. No.
If Acuna can't go from second to third.
Well, that's ABC baseball. That's what it's all about. Again, you get a man to second base with no outs to start an inning. And in this case, Austin Riley had already homered.
Right.
So a lot of the pressure was off, and that's a big part of it too. But, I mean, it's still the LCS. So Acuna standing there on second, that's all you got to do. That, to me, when you start getting into launch angle and those different things. Yeah, that's when you want that to come into a play. I don't want Freddie Freeman bunting Ronald Acuna Jr. over to third. Try to hit a home run. Acuna's fast enough, he can get to third.
No doubt.
But you don't want to chop out to the shortstop.
And Acuna thought he had hit a home run because he raised his arm up at second base like it was gone.
And I'll say this. I don't care how much fun you had watching that game last night, whether you were at your house or maybe you had some buddies over. However much fun you had watching that last night, nobody's having more fun than Ronald Acuna Jr. right now.
No doubt. And there's nothing wrong with it.
It's great. I love it.
And look, that's why I think you got to get Ozuna under contract. Those guys love him, and he loves being part of this group. Travis d'Arnaud, I'm sorry. What a great move.
Absolutely.
Nobody said that was a good move.
Absolutely.
During the offseason.
Absolutely.
All we heard about was, well, who's going to be the catcher? Oh, we got a platoon again. Well, it's not a platoon now. And then you heard, well, Ozuna's not as good as Donaldson. Well, wait a minute. Yeah, he's been better. I know it's a short season and all that, but my goodness. I'm telling you, they're going to win this series.
I think so. I mean, I think so. And the other thing, too, is after that game, the looks on the faces of those Los Angeles Dodgers, they looked beat. And I'm telling you right now, call me crazy. I think the Braves have the advantage in the pitching matchup tonight. Ian Anderson versus Clayton Kershaw. I know Ian Anderson hasn't made very many starts in his career, but he's done better in the playoffs than Kershaw has.
Well, Kershaw's been better lately. The last couple of years, he's been better.
Yeah.
He was good early. But there's also, and we talked about it last week, there's the pucker factor.
And the Dodgers are the ones feeling that, not the Braves.
They better win tonight or this thing could be short.
The Dodgers have won, eight straight division titles?
Eight straight division titles.
This would be the third year in a row they go to the World Series. They're the ones that can't get over the hump.
And haven't won it, yeah.
And whether these organizations want to admit it or not, that's a lot of pressure that those guys are dealing with. And you could see it on their face in that dugout last night. They're feeling the pressure.
Well, and, you know, we talked about the Braves since 2001 and all that. None of these guys had been part of that. These Dodgers have all been part of this.
Yeah. No, the pressure is all in that other dugout.
No doubt.
And
no doubt.
So that's. It's exciting. It really is. We're going to take a break. When we come back, Adam Duvall is, you know, they're dealing with the Adam Duvall injury. What are they going to do tonight? We'll get into that, see what the options are. And I got a feeling, man. I got a feeling this team's about to go up 2-0, Daniel. I haven't had faith in a team like this since. Does Atlanta United count when they won the title? Because if we're only going major three sports, Hawks, Braves, Falcons, I might have to go 19. It's been a while since I've had
1995
confidence in a team like this. I mean, this is I don't know, man. With teams like this, when they get it going and it's the late inning comebacks and they're better in the last three than they are in the first three, it's a magic, and you can't really. That team in the 90s had it, man, and these guys have it too.
And the analytics people can't describe it because it's not describable.
It's indescribable. Yep. It is. No, and the analytics people, look, the Pablo Sandoval. I mean, I don't know how analytical that move was, but I mean, I'm sure that had something to do with it. Marcelo Ozuna, Travis d'Arnaud. I mean, there's been good moves there. There's no question about it, yeah. But it's just, you know, we've seen how many times have we seen a team like the Dodgers get to the playoffs and like last night they can't score.
Right.
And playoff baseball, it's just different.
And you know, we want to always rip Brian Snicker for everything he does, not us, but fans. He puts Pache in last night. He didn't get a hit, but he got walked twice in two key spots.
Yeah. No, and he's not going to let you down defensively either. No, we'll take a break, come back. We'll talk about what the options are if Duvall is not available tonight for the Atlanta Braves. We'll take a break. Back with that right after this.
Now, back to the Midday Sports Zone on Sports Radio 93.1 WXKO, the Superstations.
Russ and Daniel back with you. I was feeling it last night, but I don't want to rock and roll all night tonight. Thank goodness that game's at 6 o'clock. I was so pumped I couldn't get to bed last night. I mean, it was like 2 o'clock probably before I fell asleep.
Well, I went and took a little cat nap waiting for David O'Brien's story to come in. But yeah, I mean, if you're a Braves fan, how can you not just be jacked up?
Oh man.
And excited.
So excited. The tailgate show. It is. We do have football talk on the way. Aaron Suttles is going to join us in the next segment. We'll talk some Alabama football with him. The pregame show starts at 4:50, first pitch. I guess 6:05-ish, 6:08, 6 o'clock. So they'll have it wrapped up. All right, so the little situation to deal with here. Adam Duvall, have they officially said it's an oblique? I mean, it looked like an oblique. I would imagine he's done. And it creates some issues for the Braves that they're going to have to deal with. And there's some options here for what the Braves can do to replace Duvall. You can go Johan Camargo at third and move Austin Riley into left. You can put Ozuna in left and DH d'Arnaud and let Flowers catch. Christian Pache is an option as well. Pablo Sandoval may be an option at third base. Here's the thing, and this is, we were talking about this before the show. This is one of those things, these baseball discussions, that is just tedious because people get into these debates and these arguments like there's a good answer. Johan Camargo, his slash line, 200, 244, 367. Tyler Flowers, 217, 325, 348. Pache and Sandoval, who combined for 8 plate appearances this year. Ender and Ciarte not on the postseason roster, so we don't have to worry about that.
How crazy is that?
So, I mean, there it's you know, I don't know what ultimately that they're going to do, but, you know, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question. I don't. And we'll find out, obviously, hopefully pretty soon when the game's starting at 6 o'clock. But you know what? With this team, I'm not going to worry about it. Is Travis d'Arnaud still playing? Is Freddie still in there? Ozzy? Arzuna, is he going to be in the lineup? Acuna? That guy, is he playing? Yeah, okay, great. Adam Duvall got hurt. That sucks. Adam Duvall hits home runs in bunches.
Yep.
That's a big bat to lose from the lineup. Well, that sucks.
What did he hit? 11 home runs during regular season? 16. 16, and six of them came in two games.
Yeah, only Marcell Ozuna had more for the Braves. Right, and six of them came in two games. That is correct. But I mean, you know, whatever Brian Snitker decides to do with this lineup, again, are we really going to debate whether or not Camargo or Flowers would be a better option? One's got an OPS of 611, the other's got an OPS of 673. Camargo hit four home runs this year. Flowers hit one. They had 207 plate appearances combined.
Wow.
I mean, do you feel good about either of those options?
Not
like,
really.
One no. clearly stands out in front of the other?
No, not really.
I mean,
no.
Pache is, and Pache and Sandoval are the opposite ends of the spectrum on the question mark. Pablo's a veteran player that's been around. He's a switch hitter, which can help with your lineup construction. But, you know, if the ball looks like a cheeseburger coming up off the bat, he's going to gobble it up. But you got to worry about his ability to play third base, right?
Right.
And then Pache is a kid. He's a kid.
He is a kid. He's an absolute kid. And that scares you. But, I mean, look, he got the job done last night. I mean, drew two walks. And Sandoval did make a play at third base.
He did.
So,
I would be tempted to go Camargo or Pablo at third with Riley in left. And here's why. I don't want to DH Marcell Ozuna. And the reason is, if you get into a situation with a lead late in the game, he's coming out for probably Pache for defense. I don't want any scenario where Marcell Ozuna comes out of the game.
Nope. You want that bat in the lineup? What he did last night.
If you've got a 2-1 lead going into the bottom of the ninth inning, Pache goes in. Let's say they score a run and Pache comes up in the next. I mean, you're going to want that to have been Marcell Ozuna. So keep Marcell Ozuna's bat in the lineup. If you DH Darno and Flowers is the catcher, I mean, I think Culberson's probably your emergency catcher. So, I mean, if somebody got hurt and you had to turn to that, I mean, I don't know. That's a little dicey. And again, when you're making this decision, it's not like one player stands out. We're not sitting here going, man, what are they going to do? Because, I mean, obviously it's Pablo that has to play, but do you really want Riley in left? I mean, it's not a situation like that. There's not, again, offensively, there's just not really a good option here. In fact, your best option offensively is probably Pache and Sandoval, really, if you think about it.
Yeah.
Pache's potential, Sandoval is what he's done. Does he still have it? But
throughout his career, I mean, he's got the clutch gene. There's no doubt he's got that.
Oh, yeah, the clutch gene. Oh, boy, the clutch gene. But, I mean, Camargo or Flowers, if they come up to the plate with the game on the line, are you going to feel good about one over the other?
No. Not really. Not really. No. Not really. But you just got to make a decision here and roll with it. And I think it's probably Riley playing left field. Call up Camargo and let him play third base. We'll see.
Mm-hmm.
We'll find out today. We'll find out today. But do you doubt this team?
No.
I don't.
No.
I mean, look, Adam Duvall's a fine player. Adam Duvall in that lineup is probably the, what, seventh best player in the lineup? Sixth? Sixth? I'll give him sixth.
Yeah.
Acuna, Albies, Freeman, Ozuna, Swanson, sometimes Austin Riley. So he's sixth or seventh in the lineup. I mean, you're not talking about losing one of those top guys. You're talking about losing your sixth or seventh best lineup guy.
Yeah. I mean, it sucks.
I feel pretty good about this team.
Yeah.
As long as, like you said, as long as those other six are playing, I feel pretty good
about it. Yeah. I mean, no matter what direction you go, you're gonna lose a little bit offensively and you're going to lose a little bit defensively. But, I mean, that's... And again, preemptively, that's not the manager's fault. I mean, you got to play the hand you're dealt here, and we'll see what
happen.
He does.
It stinks.
Yeah, no, it does. It really does. But it doesn't freak me out. I just have a confidence in this. Like I said, I have a confidence in this team I haven't had in an Atlanta sports team in a very, very, very long time. I mean, after the eighth inning last night, I swear to you, after the eighth inning last night, as long as the bullpen comes out and does its job in the bottom of the eighth, the Braves are fine because the top of the order is coming back around. And as that game went on, There was more and more of a focus of trying to go the other way with the pitches, you know, trying to make contact, trying to, you know, just getting on base any way you could. And you saw that. I mean, Riley made really good contact, but Acuna goes to the opposite field for his double. Freddie goes to the opposite field for his sack fly. You know, what the hit Ozuna had to score, I believe that was an opposite field hit.
Yeah, just
I mean,
a little
really,
flare to right field, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they've made the adjustment in the dugout to and that's what you have to do in the postseason. I mean, how many times do we sit here after the World Series, and I know it's not a talked-about stat, but how many times do we sit here after World Series, and the team that won the World Series was one of the best team in baseball at hitting behind runners? I mean, it's these little things that you don't think matter, but they make all the difference in the world.
Yeah, and I don't understand, again, why people – I mean, it's just the current baseball environment that we live in. It's not really considered that important. But you talk to the actual players, and it is important.
No, it matters. It absolutely
matters. Those things absolutely matter.
So, again, Braves-Dodgers tonight, 4:50 with the pregame. First pitch around 6 o'clock. And the Braves will try to go up 2-0 in the National League Championship Series. And, man, it feels good to say that. God, it feels good to say that. Giddy. Ian Anderson, Clayton Kershaw, your pitching matchup should be a good one. We're going to take a break. When we come back, Aaron Suttles jumps in here. He covers Alabama for The Athletic. We'll ask him what the hell's going on with that defense. I'm sure he hasn't been asked that question this week.
Or he's probably never been asked that question his entire career. Maybe until true. This week.
That's a good point. Bama takes on Georgia this Saturday in a game that, I don't know, kind of important. I don't know. It's kind of a big deal, don't you think? Maybe, perhaps. So we'll break it down. We'll get some intel on the Alabama side. That and more right after this.
Back to the Midday Sports Zone on Sports Radio 93.1 WXKO, thesuperstations.com.
Welcome back into the Midday Sports Zone. Russ Brown, Daniel Shirley with you. Let's talk a little Alabama football now. Aaron Suttles joins us on the line. He covers the Crimson Tide. Good morning, Aaron. How you doing?
I'm well, guys. How are you?
Hey, we're doing great. We appreciate the time. I'm sure you haven't been asked about the defense at all this week, right? No, it's just the game on Saturday night against Ole Miss. I mean, obviously, the Alabama's offense with Mac Jones was as good as an offense can be, but it was just so weird, really, is the only word I could come up with, Aaron, to watch that Bama defense against Ole Miss. I'm sure Nick Saban has not been in the best mood this week.
You know, outwardly, he's been pretty positive. I think he's just trying to put on a good face and defend his players. And that's sort of what he does. When things are going poorly, he sort of talks them up. And when things are going really, really well to keep them grounded, he sort of will have one of his calculated blow-ups at the media to get a message across to his players. So he's actually been fairly calm, but it is bizarre because they've got just as much talent as Georgia on defense, but the results couldn't be further apart.
Aaron, have you ever been on the receiving end of one of those orchestrated shots at the media?
More times than I can count. It's been a while. You know, once you've covered him a while, there are key words that you say that set him off. So you learn what to avoid because you just, as a journalist, you're just trying to get the answer to your question. So it's more about phrasing and finding a way to ask the question. And if you do it that, it's harder for him to sort of steer the question into one of his blowups.
Aaron, you referenced the talent on the defensive side of the football, and obviously we know it's there. So what can Alabama do to fix this? Is it a familiarity with the scheme? Are they having trouble with the play call? I mean, what is it that they need to do to perform better?
Well, you know, through the first two games against Missouri and Texas A&M, I thought the defense played fairly well. They were showing some growth because last year's defense was one of the worst of the Nick Saban era. And obviously they had the injuries to the linebacker. And so the sort of prevailing thought was that, okay, you develop some depth along the front seven last year, particularly at inside linebacker. You get Dylan Moses back. The defense is just going to be better. And so it had been through two games. And I think Saturday night in Oxford was just a perfect storm of things went downhill. And I think the players lost all confidence. And at some point in that game, it just became about surviving the game. I don't think Alabama's defense is nearly as bad as what happened. And let's give Lane Kiffin some credit. He knows how to attack that defense. He knows how Nick Saban's defense operates. They went in, they went at each other every day in practice for 3 years. So he sort of maybe understood the tendencies and how Nick Saban and those guys think, but they got to get better. The calls are not coming in fast enough, and I thought Dylan Moses played one of the worst games I've ever seen him play. I think they were being the opposite of confident, and that's timid. And I think once they started being timid, I think they started thinking more. And so you add all that up, and it's a full step slow. And that's where they were, and they just could not get comfortable. And this is the most damning defense damning statistic that I've seen of this defense so far. It came from Chris Felica, the Bear, from ESPN's College Game Day. Alabama ranks dead last in three and outs of anyone in the country. Dead last. They've only gotten off the field three and outs three times in three games. That's abysmal.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, when you say that and then you say it's Alabama, it just doesn't compute that it's the same, that stat fits with this unit. Aaron, do you feel like this is a group that's going to hear this all week and how they stink and they're terrible and they're the worst this, they're worse that, and then, you would think they're going to play better Saturday against Georgia?
Yeah, if Saturday night was a perfect storm of bad, I think this presents the opportunity to be good because – no offense to Georgia, and Georgia does some good things. Georgia's not as multiple as Ole Miss. They don't have one of the most gifted play callers in the country in Lane Kiffin calling plays for them. But the one thing that Georgia does have is an identity, and they have an offensive identity. And so I do think that sort of plays into Alabama a little bit. But that identity that Georgia has that we've sort of seen, even though Stetson Bennett is athletic and he's making plays with his legs when he needs to, is Georgia's a power run football team, and Alabama could not stop the run against Ole Miss. So I do expect the defense, obviously, not to give up 700 yards, but I do think Georgia will have some success because Alabama's having a lot of trouble getting off the field on third down. And if you can't stop a power run team and they're able to lean on you and those plays start to get higher and higher, one, it keeps Mac Jones and Jalen Waddle and Devontae Smith and Najee Harris on the sideline. And two, there's a cumulative effect by the end of the game where that defense is just worn out. So I think it's going to be incumbent when Alabama gets Georgia in third down to get them off the field.
Aaron Suttles is our guest here on the program. Aaron, when Alabama has the football, I think this is where this matchup gets really intriguing. Georgia has one of the best defenses, if not probably the best defense in the country right now, and they're playing at a really high level. Obviously, Alabama gained just about every yard possible they could on Saturday night. What does the Crimson Tide have to do early in this game to be able to move the ball and score points?
It's so difficult to stop Alabama. I think they just got to pass protect. That's what this. While the offensive line at Alabama has been okay at running the ball, and they certainly were great against Ole Miss, but everybody looks great against Ole Miss. Their defense is putrid. While they have looked okay running the football, they've been outstanding at pass protection. They have kept Mac Jones clean all year. And so I think that's the battle that's going to tell me if Georgia can apply pressure, particularly without having to bring extra guys. If they can get to Mac Jones, just make him uncomfortable, that will tell me how successful Georgia's going to be. It's going to tell me how successful Alabama's going to be because Mac Jones is very comfortable within the pocket. Even when he has to sidestep rushers, he's not Jalen Hurts. I mean, he can step in the pocket, suddenly move to the left, climb the pocket. So if Georgia can get home with, their base and not have to commit extra guys to rushing the quarterback, then it's going to be a lot of trouble for Alabama because Alabama has been excellent at pass blocking all year. And so that's the matchup I'll be watching. It's sort of the indicator on how successful Alabama is going to be.
Aaron, is anybody surprised how well Mac has played? Because, I mean, he's kind of been overlooked. Everybody's always kind of looking, to obviously Tua and then Tua's brother and then Bryce. I mean, and nobody ever talks about Mac, and then here he is running what looks like a historic offense.
You know, when I saw Mac close out the season last year against Auburn in a losing effort and then against Michigan, those were two of the better defenses in the country. And Mac played really well. I know everyone wants to focus on the two pick sixes he threw versus Auburn, but I mean, that's where he earned my respect. The fact that he made those mistakes, and yet he didn't shy away. He kept coming at that Auburn defense, and in fact, gave Alabama a lead in the fourth quarter on the road in that environment. Back when there were people allowed in stadiums and you had home field advantage, that's a nasty crowd. If you've ever been to Jordan Hare Stadium for a big game, that's as good as it gets in college football. So, I knew he was good then. I didn't know how good. And in fact, I didn't know that they would still be this pass centric this year, but they're just so dynamic. Stop, you know, trying to stop them. They roll in another receiver, John Metchie. So they still got three receivers, even though Henry Ruggs and Jerry Jeudy are gone. They just roll out these receivers, and Mac's just incredibly efficient. Like I said, his comfortability in the pocket is what makes him so good. And his smarts, knowing where his receivers are supposed to be, being on time with the football, going through his reads, he's just very efficient, and he's just not beating himself.
Well, it should be a heck of a matchup on Saturday. I know it's one we're all anticipating. I have a feeling, Aaron, this won't be the first time we watch these two teams play this year, but it's Saturday is going to be a heck of a ball game for sure. We appreciate your time, man.
All right, guys. Take care.
All right. That's Aaron Suttles. He covers Alabama for The Athletic. One note on Georgia, and this is the thing. This is what Georgia has to do to win the football game, and here it is. I'm sorry, Alabama fans. You might not like this. I think it's on Georgia. If Georgia offensively, because you know the defense is going to play well. They'll give up some points to Alabama. They will, but they're not giving up 63. They're not giving up 43. Might not give up 33.
Yeah.
Offensively, Georgia has got to bring it for four quarters, and they haven't done that yet. They've played six quarters of good football and six quarters of football. In the first half against Arkansas, the second half against Auburn, and the first half against Tennessee, they have been outscored 31-25. Now, in the other halves of those games, they've outscored those three 83-6. So that second that is what has to show up, because there's not going to be this snap it over the head, give up big pass plays, struggle to get the ground game going between the tackles, you know, fiery halftime speech, come out, beat the hell out of Alabama. That's not going to happen. You can't get behind like you did against Arkansas and Tennessee. And if you do have a 2 or 3 score lead in the third quarter, stick with whatever it was you were doing, because that team, unlike Auburn, can put points on the board in a hurry, even against Georgia.
Yeah, no doubt.
But I feel like, Daniel, it's Georgia. If Georgia's able to do that, they win the game.
We're going to find out how good Georgia's defense really is. I know Georgia's defense is suffocating, and you watch them play, and it looks hard to move the ball.
Mm-hmm.
But you're also talking about Tennessee. I overvalued Auburn. We saw Auburn last week against Arkansas. Offense still looked like garbage against Arkansas. You know, so is it neither one of those teams is Alabama, and not close.
Mm.
I mean, you could take Tennessee and Arkansas, Tennessee and Auburn's two offenses, and you still wouldn't have as much talent as Alabama has. And Mac Jones is playing really well at quarterback, like we just talked there with Aaron. He's playing way better than Guarantano or Bo Nix, and this team has weapons on the outside. It's got running backs 2 and 3 deep. It's got an offensive line, like Aaron said, that is pass protecting really well. And Mac doesn't look like he's going to panic in the pocket. And this is going to be the biggest test of the year for the Georgia defense. I know the Florida offense is pretty good too, but it's not on this level.
No.
This is going to be the biggest test. And it's really the first test, really. I mean, again, I know you're playing against SEC teams, and Tennessee has improved. Auburn's offense is not good. Tennessee's offense is not good. This is a great offense.
Right. We're not talking about winning the East here. We're talking about Georgia, again. I've said this a bajillion times. You go back 6-7 years ago, we're talking about Georgia in terms of winning the East and playing for an SEC title. That's not how we talk about this team. If we talk about Georgia in the sense of can they win the East, I mean, I mean, what would have to happen for them to not win the East?
Right.
I mean, a rash of injuries. Yeah. I mean, there's
the virus or something.
There's
like,
nothing.
Yeah.
There's nobody in the SEC East close to them right now.
No, there's not. I was wrong. I said Florida was, and I was wrong.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
absolutely wrong.
And I'm not saying I was right, man. Because I wasn't buying Florida, but Georgia is better than I thought they would be offensively.
Better. Right.
And Florida is worse than I thought they would be.
But I also think Alabama, like Aaron said there, Alabama's defense is not going to be that bad as right. I was last Saturday.
And this is the conversation about Georgia nationally, because it's not about what you have to do to beat Florida or beat Tennessee or beat Missouri.
Or Auburn, yeah.
Or Auburn. It's what you have to do to beat Bama, beat Clemson, beat Ohio State. That's what we're talking about. And Saturday is a chance for Georgia to prove to a lot of people nationally that they belong in that conversation. And if Stetson Bennett in that run game and Todd Monken can put together a good four quarters, they're going to win the game.
I've gone back and forth on this game a lot already. I thought Georgia would win, and I'm almost trying to talk myself out of it, saying, I mean, you 2 weeks ago, you never would have thought Georgia was going to lose, beat Alabama. Now I feel like they are, and I'm trying to talk myself out of it, and then I'm like, yeah, but it's Alabama.
Yeah.
They're not going to play like that again.
Right. But now on the flip side, if they come out like they did in the third quarter against Tennessee, and by the third possession of the second half, people are guessing what the second down play call is going to be, they're going to have a hard time. But I don't – again, I think we've seen enough in the Kirby Smart era to know it's what you have to do to win that day. And that's all they had to do to beat Tennessee. And we – I mean, it's not like this is his first rodeo in a big game against Alabama. You know what I'm saying? So right. It's going to be fun, man. It's going to be a heck of a game Saturday. We're going to take a break. Phone lines are open if you want to jump in. 478-646-ESPN. Matt Michelle jumps in here in about half an hour. We can talk Braves. We've got a little Falcons talk. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that. And wherever you want to go in the world of sports is fine with us. Back with more right after this.
Now, back to the Midday Sports Zone on Sports Radio 93.1 WXKO. The Superstations.
Welcome back into the Midday Sports Zone. Russ Brown, Daniel Shirley. Just a few minutes on the Falcons here. I don't know if you were holding out hope that things may turn around now that they parted ways with Dan Quinn and Thomas Dimitroff. I think Thomas Dimitroff was the one that really kind of told us that this team may be moving in a different direction. Because I think that move to go ahead and fire Thomas Dimitroff was probably surprising to most people. I know it was a little bit surprising to me. But then we get this press conference yesterday from Arthur Blank. And, I mean, again, they say all the right things. The Falcons are really good at that. But the reality of it is, and I'm just going to say this out loud, sometimes you just have to say it out loud. The Atlanta Falcons are going to set up a structure where the new general manager reports to Rich McKay. So to get this right, if you go back to 2007, 2008, the new GM is going to report to the guy that was demoted in favor of the last GM. How is that progress?
You demoted Rich McKay, hired Thomas Dimitroff, had the best 12 years you've ever had in your franchise history, and it's not close. Then last year, you started off awfully. You demote Thomas Dimitroff, and you move Rich McKay in as a new layer between Thomas Dimitroff and the head coach. And now you're going to fire Thomas Dimitroff and the head coach and leave Rich McKay there. The cynic in me goes, what does Rich McKay have on Arthur Blank?
I don't know.
How is Rich McKay, Jeff Schultz wrote, he's the GM with 9 lives.
Yeah.
How is he still in charge?
I don't know, man, but you talk about, from a fandom, the wind coming out of my sails. I have zero faith in this organization. And you can't go get a new owner.
Right.
But the Atlanta Falcons problem, I mean, Dan Quinn had to go. That was long overdue. Thomas Dimitroff was even more overdue than that. He should have been out the door with Mike Smith. So those guys hung around far too long. And that's kind of the way that played out. But ultimately, as far as his franchise getting better, forget it. I mean, forget it. It's not, as long as the owner is keeping Rich McKay around and touting people as Falcons for life. I mean, you had a wide receiver, 2 years into a 5-year deal, tear up his contract to the point where you probably can't even trade Julio Jones now. You're just going to have to bite that bullet and just eat that cap space for the next 3 years. And in those negotiations that never should have been happening in the first place, the general manager was handcuffed because the owner said, well, he's going to be a Falcon for life. So the reality of it is, and I think this, I know for a lot of folks it already kind of had hit home, but for me yesterday it really hit home. This organization is just not good, and it's not going to be because they don't have a good owner.
Yeah, I it's weird because, again, we talk about the best owner they've ever had, low bar there, not saying much. And you feel like you have no confidence. Both those things can be true at the same time. You wonder what has happened to Arthur.
I don't know, man.
Look, Rich McKay did a great job getting the stadium built. Rich McKay was not a good GM. They were not a good franchise with Rich McKay as the GM. And I know Arthur's loyal. I get that. That is a great quality to have as a human being. It's not a great quality to have as an owner of a pro sports franchise. It's just not.
No.
And him hitching his wagon to Rich McKay, you're not going to get a great GM. Who are you going to get who's going to want to come in and say, yeah, I'm going to answer to Rich McKay, and then when things go bad, he's going to step back and say, hey, it's not me. I didn't have anything to do with
it. You're not going to get an established veteran difference maker. Lewis Riddick is a name that a lot of people have thrown out there. I seriously doubt he wants to come to Atlanta and have Rich McKay looking over his shoulder. What you're going to end up with is somebody from a scouting department that's never been a general manager before, just like Thomas Dimitroff. Just like if you look at the coaching hires that Arthur Blank has made, Jim Mora, no experience. Bobby Petrino, no experience. Mike Smith, no experience. Dan Quinn, no experience. I mean, it's just rinse and repeat with this guy. And it's the same old, same old. I mean, and it's just after cheering for this team, again, as I've said, I've been a fan of this team for over 30 years. And in 30 years, I've seen the safety not be able to play in the Super Bowl because he solicited a prostitute the night before. On the day he accepted the Fellowship of Christian Athletes Man of the Year award,
yep.
I've seen the quarterback go to prison. And now with the way this coach was allowed to hang around and have so much influence, I mean, on the uniforms, for crying out loud, and just drive this thing right into the ground. And the owner meddles so much that you're in a salary cap hell. You can't really even see your way out of it. I'm really questioning, why do I cheer for this team? It's a waste of time.
The Rich McKay thing blows my mind. It blows my mind.
It's nuts. Got to take a break for the top of the hour. Matt Michelle on the way in about 15 minutes or so. You can jump in here with a phone call in the meantime. 478-646-ESPN. Hour number two on the way right after this.
It's time to have lunch and talk sports. It's the Midday Sports Zone on Middle Georgia's ESPN.
Hour number two, Midday Sports Zone. Russ Brown, Daniel Shirley with you. Basking in the glow of what was a mammoth shot by Austin Riley last night. Braves lead the Dodgers 1-0 in the American League Championship Series. Say it loud. Say it often. We've got Matt Michelle on the way in 15 minutes. We'll talk some college football with him. Jordan Bianchi will jump in here for a few. We'll talk some Roval, a little NASCAR with him. And open phone call time in the meantime. 478-646-ESPN. I'm excited. I think the Braves are going to win tonight.
I do too. I really do. I think they're in a really good spot, and it feels like, you know, it almost feels like they jumped the Dodgers and the Dodgers weren't expecting it. And, you know, we'll see if the Dodgers can respond. But it was it almost looked like they caught the Dodgers off guard a little bit.
Yeah. It's one of those things where, you know, look, I thought the Freddie Freeman, obviously, the home run by Freeman in the top of the first was huge. Because that just took so much pressure off.
Right.
And Max Fried just continued to go out and pitch well. He made one mistake to Kiki Hernandez, and Hernandez made him pay for it. It was an 0-2 pitch, too, by the way, wasn't it?
All the home runs they hit last night were with two strikes.
Wow. But Hernandez, I mean, hey, look, Max hung one, and Hernandez took advantage of it. But, you know, the pitching for this Braves team, I mean, the bullpen's been there all year. Max Fried's been good all year. That shouldn't surprise us. Ian Anderson, I have a lot of confidence in this young man, and it's just what he has to do is have a good start, and the Braves don't need to just completely and totally implode in the first few innings, because I know it's just one game, but when that camera panned to the Dodger dugout after the third out in the ninth inning, they looked beat.
It looked like a team that was kind of looking around going, wait, what just happened?
Yeah.
We're supposed to win this series. We're the best team in baseball, supposedly. And that other team jumped all over us. And now what are we going to do? And look, you got Clayton Kershaw going to the mound, so you're not freaking out or anything. But you also had Buehler pitching last night, where you feel like you're going to win if he pitches. And they got the best of you. And it really is a great start for the Braves. It's a long series. I think it's going to be a long series. But it's really kind of a impressive start for the Braves, and I think they've really put themselves in a good spot to be able to do some damage in this series.
I'll say this. I predicted Braves in seven, and if the Dodgers win tonight, I think you'll see it go seven games. But I'm going to say this. If the Atlanta Braves win tonight, you won't see baseball past Friday.
We got a little bit of breaking news.
Okay.
No Clayton Kershaw tonight. Back spasms.
Wow.
Tony Gonsolin is going to pitch tonight in game two.
Wow.
The Dodgers just tweeted that out 3 minutes ago. That changes things.
Wow. All right. We got a couple of phone calls here. 478-646-ESPN. Dodger fan he's laughing.
Why didn't you just hang up?
Ken and Cummings.
You should have just hung up.
I mean, I'm sorry. That sucks.
No. Well, you know what it is? Of all the people to give me the news, Daniel Shirley.
There you go, buddy.
That knife was turned. He was actually sitting there probably thinking, man, I hope Ken's on the other line.
No.
Didn't hear this news.
I'm here for you. I'm here for you.
First of all, Daniel, you need to know, all my kidding is just that. You're a great guy,
definitely.
And I appreciate everything y'all do. Seriously. But no, last couple of days. I don't really know. The Dodgers are done. They are, regrettably. And I told you, Russ, and I said this yesterday to Bill, if they lose this, I don't care how they lose it. I don't care if it goes to 17 innings in the seventh game. If Dave Roberts loses his series, he should be terminated. And I know that might sound harsh, but you get to a point where, you said it earlier in the show, you haven't gone over that plateau, right?
Yeah.
And, I mean, when I started watching the game last night and all the Braves players are just loose and they're smiling, I thought to myself, they're playing with house money. These guys are literally just having a great time. And, you know, when Walker Buehler got up to, 80 pitches in the third inning, mm-hmm. I looked at my wife and I said, I don't know what we're going to do. And thankfully he pushed through a couple more. But it's a shame that Kershaw can't. What's the problem, Daniel? What did they say the injury was?
They said back spasms.
Wow.
And he's had problems with his back.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. That may actually, that may hurt his career down the road. But no, listen, guys, I'm so happy for the Braves. I think you know, Russ, I say that genuinely. I really am. And, I'm in a no-lose situation. But, man, speaking for the Dodger Nation, I think this is going to be a rough few days.
Wow. Well, hey, it's hang in there. Hang in there with him.
Great interview with that guy from Alabama, by the way. I like what he was putting down about Georgia and Alabama. So we'll see how that goes Saturday, too. But, guys, I love the show. You know that, and y'all be safe. Okay?
All right, Ken. You too. Appreciate it. Ken, he mentioned it there in the phone call, but Ken had mentioned to me yesterday off air about you see things, a perspective from a fan that you don't get because you're not a fan of that team, and the pressure that is on Dave Roberts because they haven't won the World Series in this 8-year span. And I go back to the look on their faces in the dugout, the Dodgers' faces after the third out of and final out in the bottom of the ninth last night. And I mean, they looked beat, and that's and that what Ken told me. That was the first thing I thought. It's like they look like a team that is absolutely feeling the pressure. And 6 hours before first pitch, they just got an absolute gut punch now that Clayton Kershaw has been scratched from the lineup.
Yeah, they looked tight last night, and the Braves looked anything but tight.
Yeah.
They're laughing and giggling and doing selfies, and I mean, it's a different look for sure.
It is. It is. 478-646 ESPN. Wesley is in Reynolds. Hey, Wesley, how you doing?
Hey guys, what's going on? Man, that is big news about Kershaw. Hopefully, we can capitalize on that offensively and go ahead and get, you know, two up on him. That'll be huge. Hope he's okay. You know, he's a tremendous competitor, but hopefully we can, you know, he's definitely had a lot of success against us, so that's big if we can go ahead and capitalize on that. But man, this, like y'all said, man, this team's so much fun to watch. They're having fun, they're enjoying playing the game. The thing that I'm so impressed with is their ability to battle on both sides, you know, as far as pitching and hitting, you know, and Melanson and Martin and everybody and Wilson Pitt.
Hey,
you know, pitched incredible, and they get runners in scoring position, and we just battle that. You know, they battle through and end up, you know, leaving guys on base, and you know, we left a lot of guys on base too, but we had that many more hits, and you know, it's a number thing. Guys in, and we battled. If you look at how many open counts we had and 1-2 counts, and then battled back and ended up, you know, getting on base, getting hits, getting walks, scoring runs. This, you know, they're just. I'm just proud of the way the guys battled on both sides. But a lot of fun. Hopefully it'll be another fun game tonight.
Absolutely, Wesley. It's good to hear from you. This the word that just keeps coming up. Fun. I mean, this team is it's awesome. It's awesome.
And look, you don't want obviously somebody to be hurt, but the Braves just lost a guy last night. I mean, that happens when you get in the playoffs. You've got to battle through that stuff.
Look, it sucks. I mean, I'm the one. I want to go up 2-0 with a win over Clayton Kershaw. But, you know, that's not an option. So, Tony Consolin will be on the mound. Take advantage.
You'll take a 2-0 lead over him, too.
Take advantage. Right. Take advantage of the capitalize.
That's right.
You know, I said earlier in the show with the injury to Duvall, you know, the options for Brian Snitker and how he's going to address that with the lineup, you know, there's not really – I don't know that there's any one – choice or decision that stands out, you know. You just and I use the term play the hand you're dealt, you know, and that's kind of a, you know, you're 3 on the draw to an inside straight, man. That's not a, I mean, it might work, but you're not really there. Well, you just got a pocket pair right there with no Kershaw, so you know, hey, you win some, you lose some. You just got to play it the way it is.
Right, I love it, man. I mean, now I don't love that Kershaw's hurt.
No, of course not.
You got to love where the Braves are sitting
but,
right now.
I mean, you just. It is what it is.
Take advantage of it.
John's in Warner Robins. What's up, man?
Hey, man. I've said it all year, actually for the past few years. Anytime you get L.A. out of that bandbox in Chavez Ravine, you have a great opportunity of, you know, limiting their damage. They had a few fly balls last night, Russ, that have been easily 4 or 5 rows out in left field at Chavez Ravine.
Yep.
So you give yourself a fighting chance when you get them out of that bandbox. I think Smith needs to avoid the circumstances where he had the outfield out in the last inning. That was ugly. We got lucky there. With Culberson out there in the right, and you know we had to shift Acuna and Marquez was pinch hit for, but you know, that's just how it played out.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the Dodgers don't have anybody that doesn't throw 100 miles an hour. Apparently, Jesus Christ!
Oh man, no, they that,
good but, God Almighty!
And what was it? Carrot Top out there pitching last night? Who the hell was that guy?
Was freaking bringing it, dude. He was humming it.
Oh, he was, like, man.
I was like, is there anybody that doesn't go 100 miles an hour in the Dodger blue uniform?
That's what they do. And they all seem tall and lanky, and they're except for that. And then the other guy that came in, I mean, he looked like he could play guard for the Falcons.
So, yeah, no. I mean, I guarantee they could probably put Max Muncy's big behind out there, and he'd throw 100 miles an hour. Which, when the devil comes to collect for his soul, for what he sold out for success, it's going to be hell to pay for Dodger blues, man. But go Braves, and I look forward to actually, I'm glad Kershaw is hurt. I don't wish it on him, but, you know, he's tough if we can't beat him. So I'm glad he's out. So yeah. Go Braves, man. Thank
you
all.
Thank you, John. It is what it is, man. Sometimes that's a good thing for you. Sometimes it's not. More news. Johan Camargo has been added to the League Championship Series roster, replace Adam Duvall.
Which means Adam Duvall can't play in the World Series.
Right, too. He's done. But it's a left oblique, so he would probably be out.
Probably be
anyway.
Done anyway, yeah.
So,
I mean, he immediately grabbed his left side and...
You knew.
Yep.
And look, you hope it's a cramp, yeah. But I mean, it's baseball. That ain't a cramp. We know exactly what that is. Unfortunately,
he walked in the dugout and went right through the dugout, straight to the clubhouse. There was no stopping.
He knew. Yeah, I mean, everybody knew. So now, will Camargo be in the lineup? We'll see. The speculation is that Camargo would be at third and Riley will be in left. We'll see. I don't want to see Azuna in the outfield simply because I don't want there to be a situation where he's subbed out for defense. You would have to do that. I mean, if he is in the outfield and that happens, I mean, you don't want to leave him out there with a lead late in the ball game. But I just don't, in case something crazy happens and the Dodgers had a rally late to tie and then you go into extra innings, I want Azuna in that lineup and DHs. It's kind of like Marcell Ozuna has become the DH. You know, like, right. Like Freddie's the first baseman, right. Ozuna's the DH. That's his spot. Leave him there.
We talked about going into the season. We didn't know what Ozuna was going to be. Is he going to be the left fielder? Is he going to be the DH? No, he's the DH.
Yeah.
And hell if it's not working.
And just having that bat behind Freddie. See, that's the other part of it, too. If you have to make a defensive sub late and then you do end up with a rally in extra innings, not only is he not in the lineup, there's no protection behind Freeman because that's going to be Pache or Culberson. Who knows what it's going to be? But it's not going to be Marcell Ozuna. And if you don't think protection in the lineup matters for Freddie Freeman, go look at his career numbers before Matt Kemp showed up in 2016 and since 2016 when he's had Kemp, Donaldson, and Ozuna behind. It makes a big difference.
No doubt.
We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll get back into the college football talk. Matt Mershell of the Orlando Sentinel will be our guest. That and more as we continue right after this.
Back to the Midday Sports Zone on Sports Radio 93.1 WXKO, thesuperstations.com.
Welcome back into the Midday Sports Zone. Russ Brown and Daniel Shirley with you here. We were scheduled to have Matt Mershell on, and the strangest thing has happened. Rocking and rolling, you know. Talked to Aaron Suggs earlier. Had some really good calls, and all of a sudden our phone system is not working.
That damn Dodgers fan called in and broke our phone system. Is that what it was? He jinxed us. No. We took two or three calls after that. And now all of a sudden the phones don't work. So it's just bizarre. Yeah, we had Aaron on earlier and no problems. And took about three or four Braves/Dodgers calls. And now we can't call out. So just a weird happening. But, you know, we got a lot to talk about for the next 45 minutes. A lot of Georgia. I mean, Georgia-Alabama, man. It's the biggest game of the... Is this the biggest game of the regular season? I mean, it's hard to say because the Big Ten teams haven't started playing yet, but it really does kind of feel like the biggest game of the regular season.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. To date, I don't think it's close. But the reality of it is, this isn't. It's a big game. Alabama's got some issues on defense they need to work through. Georgia wants to prove to the country that they belong in the national championship conversation. But they're going to play each other again.
Right.
Spoiler alert.
A regular season.
Yeah.
This is a regular season game. That's not when they play again in Atlanta, that's not going to be a regular season game. Although I guess it does count stat-wise as a regular season game, but it's not really. It's a de facto playoff game, really. I mean, look, if you're Georgia and you lose this time, and both teams have one loss, or, you know, and you go to that game one loss, and maybe Bama has no losses. If you're able to beat them that second time, and, you know, maybe Alabama falls out of the playoffs. And the reverse is true, too. If you're Georgia, you win this week, and then somehow you get to the finals with no losses, and Bama beats you, depending on what else happens, they might knock you out of the playoffs.
Right.
So, these are two huge games, and we say that not knowing that second one's going to happen, but we feel pretty confident that it's going
to
happen.
And here's another thing to just kind of throw out there. And again, we don't know what's going to happen with so many, whether it's a conference only schedule or more conference games than we're used to seeing these teams playing. So record wise, we don't know how things are going to shake out. But you remember last week we were talking about the Big 12, and if Oklahoma beats Texas, then your two sort of brand programs are sitting there at two losses. Well, all of a sudden now, you look at the SEC, and there's only going to be one undefeated team left after this game.
After this, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, Florida's already got one loss, and Texas A&M and Auburn have one loss.
LSU's done.
LSU's, yeah.
I mean, LSU still hadn't played Alabama, and they've already got two losses.
I mean, that's the craziest
so
one.
So that is the just the most bizarre thing about this entire college football season is I thought LSU would take a step back. I didn't think they were going to give up 45 to Missouri, and I didn't think they were going to lose to give up 600 yards to Mississippi State.
There's a lot more going on there than just who left, because it's not like they didn't have talent. I mean, only Alabama had more people on the preseason SEC team than LSU. They still, I mean, it's not. I mean, there was going to be a step back from last season, but this is you lost to Missouri,
right?
And I know some people were talking about, well, you know, Missouri, and they've done this in the past. That no. There's no sugarcoating that one.
Nope.
That is Kentucky, Missouri, South Carolina, Vanderbilt. Those are not good football teams right now, and LSU just, well, they're not either.
You could kind of make an excuse for the air raid and Mike Leach and catching you off guard and all that stuff. But when it happens two times in 3 weeks and you're not talking about Alabama in either one of those weeks, there's no excuse.
No, you couldn't stop Missouri, nor could you put it in from the 1 yard line in four plays. LSU, we're not talking about LSU could not gain a yard in four plays or stop anybody. LSU. So this is it's a big game from a national standpoint, because the loser of this game cannot stub its toe again. And especially because you don't know what else is going to happen around the country. And, you know, the sneaky little thing that's happening here is, if somebody can run the table in the Pac-12, the door is opening for them, mainly because of what's happened in the Big 12. We know Ohio State's going to be in the mix. We know, and they're going to have some challenges with Penn State and Michigan when they finally get going. I mean, it's not a cakewalk for Ohio State by any stretch of the imagination.
They got to play 8 games in 8 weeks.
Yeah, that's going to be tough. But if one of these teams, and I don't know, Oregon, USC, whomever, if one of those teams kind of comes out of nowhere in the Pac-12 and goes undefeated, again, you've already got Texas and Oklahoma at two losses. Now, there are undefeated teams in the Big 12. But it could get really interesting really fast with what's already happened here by October the 13th.
Yeah, is anybody taking Okie State seriously? I mean, are we yet?
It's hard for me to take Mike Gundy serious.
Right, no doubt.
I'm just going to say that out loud.
Even if they got to one, like if Oklahoma went through their schedule, wins the Big 12 with one loss, everybody goes, okay, it's Oklahoma. Yeah, they're in. It's almost like an automatic. But if Oklahoma State does all that and they have one loss, are they an automatic? No, because people aren't going to take them seriously. And it doesn't look like Oklahoma and Texas are any good this year. I know that was an exciting game Saturday, but two bad football teams can make an exciting game. I mean, we've seen that throughout the history of college football. So there's no doubt that two bad football teams can play a good, well, not a good, but an interesting college football game. And that was on display Saturday at the Cotton Bowl. So if you're Oklahoma State, you don't even really have the marquee win on your schedule now if you go through the schedule with one loss or no loss. If they get no losses, they're probably in, especially since, like you said, there's not going to be a bunch of undefeated teams in the SEC. There's only going to be one in the ACC if Clemson makes it through, or Notre Dame. If Notre Dame makes it through, you know, Ohio State, whatever happens in the Pac-12, we don't know. So it's a weird time, and we know that. We've known that since March, when all hell broke loose that day. We were over it at Mercer doing the show that day. I don't think you were. I think you were out. And I did the show over at Mercer, and all hell broke loose with things being canceled and postponed, and we didn't know what was going to happen. So we know it's a weird year, and this was going to be a weird football season. But boy, I don't know that we thought we would be at this point where there'd already you're marking Texas and Oklahoma off the list, and you know who's and who's going to get in. It's going to be really interesting to see that. And the winner of this game Saturday has a huge leg up.
They really do. They really and really to answer your question, it is the biggest game, and it's so much because. Like Georgia, let's look at the Bulldogs' perspective here and what they have remaining on the schedule. And again, remember now, we're talking about this team as a national championship contender, not a favorite to win the East. If they get past Alabama, their remaining schedule is Kentucky, Florida, Missouri, Mississippi State, South Carolina, Vanderbilt. I mean, Florida is the only team remaining that can even push them. And I seriously doubt that because the Gators can't stop anybody.
They can't stop anybody.
So, you know, this is – you get past Alabama – you've really put yourself in a situation where you don't really have to win the SEC championship game to go to the playoffs.
That's right.
For the Crimson Tide, a little bit different scenario, and really, and truthfully, Alabama's a tough team to kind of to gauge right now because I think there's still a lot of us that just refuse to believe their defense is that bad. But If they beat Georgia, and it's kind of the same thing for them. If they beat Georgia, they've got Tennessee, Mississippi State, LSU, Kentucky, Auburn, Arkansas. So the winner of this game is in really, really good shape moving forward. And the reality of it is they're in really good shape, and they don't have to win their conference to make the playoffs. So, yeah, I think it's a huge game.
I think it's right. I think it's the biggest game of the regular season. I really do.
Yeah.
Look, Ohio State and Michigan might be undefeated when they play each other, and that changes things.
Yeah. I mean, again, we don't know how it's going to play out.
We don't know how it's going to play out. But right now, it looks like this is the biggest one on the schedule. Clemson, Notre Dame, if Notre Dame keeps winning, that could be a top five matchup. So maybe that changes things. But this looks like a huge game, and whoever wins this is, I mean, really in the catbird seat. To be in a great – I mean, you can almost lock down your plans to go to the playoff if you win this game Saturday.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of stuff to navigate, but a very doable for both of these teams with what's remaining on the schedule. We'll take a break, come back, more talk here. We'll try to figure out what's going on with these phones. Maybe hopefully we can talk to some people. If not, we'll just talk to each other and hope you enjoy the listen. Back with more right after this.
Now, back to the Midday Sports Zone on Sports Radio 93.1 WXKO, the Superstations.
You alright over there? There's just more days than I should. I'm here doing the show and thankful that we don't have a webcam.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. No doubt. Because every once in a while I just start to lose it and start dancing, and I don't want anybody to see that.
Yeah. Georgia Tech and Clemson play this week. Clemson's a 27-point favorite.
Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, but
I'm surprised it's that much.
I am too. I really am. It's a noon kick at Bobby Dodd Stadium. Georgia Tech had a really nice win against Louisville. I don't know. Can they keep? But it's, you know, the problem that Georgia Tech is going to run into is their defense. It's just not good.
Right.
And Trevor Lawrence and Travis Etienne are probably the best two offensive players in the country, and they're on the same team. So that's going to be that could be a problem. You were telling me during the break the Yellow Jackets are 46% on third down?
On defense, right.
On defense,
that's
right.
Not good. They've given up 46% on defense on third down. They're actually pretty good on third down offensively. They're at 44%, which is pretty good. I had somebody ask me earlier this morning what can – who compares to Clemson that Georgia Tech has played? And UCF is pretty good offensively. They're not Clemson good, and they don't play any defense.
Well, the thing is,
they don't have the combination.
When you play, when you say, okay, who compares to Clemson? Well, right now, nobody in the country, because nobody in the country is doing what Clemson is doing on both sides of the ball.
Right.
So there is no comparison to what the Yellow Jackets are going to be up against on on Saturday.
You got to be able to get off the ball. You got to be able to get off the field, man. You can't be third and seven and let the other team convert. You just can't. Louisville, you know, look, we talked about Georgia Tech winning that game last week, and they did. Louisville was 9 of 17 on third down.
And didn't they convert two or three fourth downs? Or was
they
that...
were two or three on fourth down.
So, yeah, so they picked up over half of them eventually with a fourth down conversion.
That's not good.
Yeah, it's not good. It's so tough because you just – and this is kind of into the frustrating thing because I think you have a team now that's good enough. You can go into some games with an expectation that they're going to win, and you can come out of games like Syracuse disappointed that they didn't because you felt like they should have. But then the reality of the number one team in the country coming to town and you being a 27-point dog at home and the fact that Clemson's probably going to cover that. I mean, unless the Yellow Jackets can score – in the 20s, Clemson's probably going to cover that.
Well, they got forced turnovers.
Well, yeah.
They've got to force some turnovers. And they did Friday. They forced
Clemson
three.
Clemson doesn't turn the ball over.
Well, Trevor Lawrence hasn't thrown an interception in like 350 passes. Yeah. He did have a fumble last week, but.
And it's not like, I mean, and I wouldn't imagine Clemson's coming out to start the game with the playbook wide open.
Probably not. I mean, they're probably going to showcase ETN.
Yeah, if they're going to go short, quick, safe passes to start the game against Miami, why wouldn't they do it against Georgia Tech?
Yeah, yeah. And Georgia Tech's not getting any pressure on the quarterback. If Trevor Lawrence has all day to sit back there and throw the ball, he's going to pick you apart.
Yeah.
And I know Georgia Tech's got a really good secondary. They do. They haven't played as well this year as we kind of thought they were. Thought that would be their strength going into the season, and it hasn't been so far. He's going to pick you apart if you don't get some pressure on him.
Yeah. So I think, you know, you just take your medicine on Saturday, and then moving forward, and Boston, as we said yesterday, look, Boston College is winnable, Pittsburgh's winnable, Duke's winnable, NC State's winnable. If they find a way to win those games and go 6-4,
oh my gosh.
I mean, Jeff Collins might get some recognition for possibly some Coach of the Year stuff. I'm not kidding.
No doubt.
I mean, and that would be quite the turnaround because really coming off the UCF game or the Syracuse game, even more so than UCF, what it was looking like 1-9 because I don't think there's a team on the schedule left that's worse than Syracuse, save for maybe Duke.
Yeah. I after the Syracuse game, I thought they're in some trouble, but the way they responded to that to me said a lot about this group and what they can be. Now, we'll say they got to get off to a better start. They've been bad in the first half. They've been outscored 41-14 in the first quarter this year. They've been doubled up in the first half, 82-41. That can't continue. Mm-mm. You can't live on that edge for an entire season because you'll get pushed off the side of the cliff.
Yeah, you will. So it's, again, a noon kick at Bobby Dodd Stadium, and the Yellow Jackets welcome the number one team in the country to town. We're going to pick against the spread on Friday. I might take the points in this one.
Well, we didn't do very well with that last week. So
no, that's why I don't. Yeah.
We need some redemption.
Looking at some of those point spreads for entertainment purposes only, of course. Louisiana's a 7.5-point favorite tomorrow night against Coastal. I mean, they're
that
home.
Game is tomorrow night.
Mm-hmm. It was originally supposed to be the Georgia Southern App State game. Yeah, I mean, I think Coastal can go in there and hang with them. I really do. And Jamie Chadwell's offense he's been there, he's built it up, and he just does things with a gun option that very difficult for teams to defend.
Wasn't he at Charleston Southern before that? I think.
Yep. Yep. Okay. Yep. So that's. That's 7.5, man. That's kind of steep. Tulane, SMU on Friday night. SMU is a 6.5-point favorite. Whatever happens in this game, Tulane in the first half is either going to be down by 3 touchdowns or up by 3 touchdowns, but it will be close at the end.
It'll be an exciting game at the very end. There's no doubt about that.
Oh, that's what Coach Fritz and the Green Wave have brought to the table so far.
They're going
to
give Coach Fritz a cardiac if they don't get something figured out with that, man.
No doubt. BYU visits Houston also on Friday night. Cougs a 3-point favorite in that one. Cincinnati's only a 3-point favorite as they go to Tulsa. And, you know, Cincinnati's, and there's going to be a team from the group of five that's talked about as a potential playoff team, especially with what's happened in the Big 12. Cincinnati's that team. They are 3-0 in the season. They're ranked eighth in the country. a tough road game against Tulsa, obviously. They're only a 3-point favorite, but we'll keep an eye on the Bearcats as the season rolls along. Miami's a 10.5-point favorite at home against Pittsburgh. You're going to see them bounce back just fine. This wasn't, oh, well, Miami's not back. They're not ready for the big time. No. It's just not, Miami's a good team. Clemson's a different animal. Miami's going to bounce back just fine against Pittsburgh. Auburn's a 3.5-point favorite at South Carolina. Maybe they'll have their officials with them. If they do, they'll win. Tennessee is 6-point favorite over Kentucky. I look for them to bounce back, too. Notre Dame is 17-point favorite over Louisville. Going to have to tighten up that defense, man. They gave up some points to the Noles. Or maybe Florida State's starting to find themselves a little bit offensively.
Well, they changed quarterbacks. James Blackman is not the quarterback anymore, which is stunning to even think about. Because he was – I mean, I remember when he got there, he was supposed to be the next big thing, and it has not worked out.
No, it has not. Florida and LSU, the big one. Florida's a 13.5-point favorite in this game. I'm sorry.
Is that right?
LSU just scored 40 points. I know they couldn't stop anybody.
Yep.
But you don't think LSU is going to be able to keep up with Florida on offense?
That's surprising.
I might be taking the Tigers and the points on that one. A&M's a 6.5-point favorite at Mississippi State. Mississippi State has taken, or at least their offense has taken the last two games off. We'll see if they're ready to play again. North Carolina's a 13-point favorite at Florida State. Alabama, a 6-point favorite against Georgia. And the over-under should be out later in the week. I'm more curious as to what the over-under in this game is going to be than the point spread. Virginia Tech, an 11-point favorite over Boston College and Oklahoma State. The undefeated team in the Big 12, the hope of the Big 12 goes to Baylor. There's no line on that game. Oh, well, it's postponed.
Yeah, that's been postponed because Baylor had,
that's right,
had another outbreak. Has there been another team that's had more problems with COVID than Baylor?
Florida Atlantic.
Well, yeah. Some of those we question. Right? Maybe I do. Maybe you don't, but I do.
I will say this. The question has been posed to me, did they even want to play football this year? They're 1-0.
They've only played one game? Wow.
Yep. Which is one more than Rice has played.
That's right.
So, and then Old Dominion opted out, so they're not playing. But it's a mess, man. And then you hate it. You hate to see it. You hope nobody, has a serious illness because of it. And hopefully they can get past it and play some football. I'm sure those kids want to play, or else they would have opted out like Old Dominion did. So, yep, it's, that's something we're going to have to deal with. We had our first SEC postponement, right, with Missouri and Vanderbilt.
That's right. So, that's right.
It's and we'll have our first Big Ten at some point, and then our first Pac-12. And
we've had many ACC. It's going to happen. It's just going
to
happen.
And the Big Ten and the Pac-12, frankly, because they waited so late to get started, they're going to have a really tough time squeezing all that action in before the December 19th. So
they don't really have the luxury of having any postponements.
I mean, I think you're just going to have to scratch it or call it a forfeit. I hope that – I don't want to – they were talking about making the Titans forfeit. I don't understand why, because they're going to that high school and working out when they weren't supposed to. I'm not saying they didn't do anything wrong, but forfeit just feels cheap. Just scratch it and don't play it. But forfeit, I don't.
Yeah,
I'm not a fan of that.
Yeah,
I like competition. We'll take a break. Wrap it up right after this.
Back to the Midday Sports Zone on Sports Radio 93.1 WXKO, thesuperstations.com.
Welcome back into the Midday Sports Zone. Russ Brown, Daniel Shirley with you here. Game 2 of the National League Championship Series this afternoon and into the early evening. The Atlanta Braves taking on the Los Angeles Dodgers with a 1-0 lead. We'll have the pregame for you starting right here on the Superstations at 4:50. And first pitch will be short.
You all right over there?
Yeah, coffee went down.
How exciting is it that you go into game 2 knowing you have a 1-0 lead? And, I mean, nothing against Clayton Kershaw, knowing you don't have to face Clayton Kershaw.
The big news, if you haven't heard, Tony Gonsolin will get the start tonight for the Dodgers. Clayton Kershaw has been scratched. Now, I pulled up and I hope I'm saying his name right, Gonsolin's stats here, and he's good. He's not a lot of experience. This will be his 21st game, or he's had 20 games in the regular season. He's made 14 starts in his career. His career ERA is 2.60. He's only given up 6 home runs in 82 innings. And you know, the strikeout is what a lot of people look at, the Ks per nine. And I don't see the strikeouts on the stat line. Oh, there they are. 83 strikeouts in 86 innings. So he's been good. And what you can't do if you're the Braves is let your guard down. And that's the one thing. In this day and age of information, you know, you may have some guys thinking, well, who in the hell is Tony Gonsolin? But when they get the scouting report, they'll know good and darn well who he is.
The Braves don't know who he is.
Yeah, they'll be prepared. So this is, look, Kershaw's out, but this guy, this Gonsolin character, he's performed well. So don't think, you know, this is a tap-in putt for the Braves by any stretch of the imagination. It's this guy's put up some good numbers in his short career. He's 26 years old. He's a California kid, was drafted by the Dodgers in 2016 out of St. Mary's. So, you know, this is a ninth round pick. So, I mean, this is somebody they thought could contribute down the road. It's kind of looking at his game log from 2020. First time out, he only lasted 4 innings, but he only gave up 1 hit and walked 1. But that was the first start of the season. He had a bad start against Texas, but everything else has been pretty good. I mean, in the month of September, he made 4 starts, appeared in 5 games, threw 29 innings. The record was 2-3, which isn't great, but you know, he gave up 11 earned runs. I mean, he pitched well down the stretch. 6 inning start, a 5 inning start, a 7 inning start, a 5 inning start, a 6 inning start. And after what we saw with the Braves, that's, you get into the 6th inning, we're Braves fans are impressed, because we didn't see a whole lot of that this year.
Yeah,
he's really good. I mean, he's got a chance to be real good. But again, it's not Kershaw. But you can't relax. I mean, you're in the playoffs. This guy's good, or they wouldn't turn to him.
Right.
You know, they're not going to just throw some schlub out on the mound just because Kershaw can't pitch. We know how much depth they've got in their rotation and how much talent they have in their rotation. So, I mean, if this guy wasn't any good, they wouldn't just say, hey, you're going to go pitch tonight just because we need a warm body. No, they're going to turn to somebody they trust. And like you said, I mean, he doesn't have a whole lot of experience, but he's talented or he wouldn't be in this spot.
Yep. So Ian Anderson will be on the mound, and nothing changes for Ian, right? I mean, he's got to go out and face this lineup and perform well so the Braves can take a 2-0 lead in the series. Another cool thing from last night, there were nearly 11,000 fans in the ballpark, and you could hear the tomahawk chop. How cool was that?
How crazy was that? Yeah.
And, I mean, we know there's Braves fans all over the country, so it was, I mean, that had to give them a little boost, too, to kind of hear that going throughout the stadium, knowing that the people in attendance are there to cheer for you. I'm sure there were some Dodger fans in attendance as well.
But, oh, sure, yeah.
But the Braves fans with the chop, that was pretty cool. You could hear it you could hear it on the air.
Yep. And it wasn't the PA guy doing it over the loudspeakers like they do at Truist Park. This was the fans doing it themselves.
Yep. So game 2 tonight, this evening, rather, and let's go Braves. Rays and Astros are the late game. That's on TBS, so you can watch the end of that, I guess. We can hear the end of it here, too. We'll have the conclusion of that game when the Braves postgame show is over. Well, Tampa Bay can kind of put this thing away tonight, can't they? They got a 2-0 lead, and boy, the Rays are good. The Rays are good, and they've been knocking the cover off the ball. They won the game yesterday by a final score of 4-0. And one player in particular that is really – let me pull up – that's not the box score from yesterday. I'm going to pull up the box score from yesterday's game, because one player in particular for the Rays is having an outstanding postseason, and that is – and I have to pull his name up because I can't say it without looking at it – Randy Arozarena.
He's really good, man.
He is having a phenomenal postseason for the Tampa Bay Rays. And, you know, look, the Braves got to take care of business against the Dodgers first. But, I mean, this is a guy who's hitting 375 and slugging 750 in the postseason. And Tampa only had four hits yesterday, but they were big ones. They got up early 3-0 and just kind of hung on to it. And I have a feeling they're getting ready to go to the World Series. So, you know, that's probably who you're going to be facing in the next round, Dodgers or Braves. I'm not trying to jinx anything, I promise.
That's a tough team to beat. No doubt about that. And think about how they build their team. They don't have all the money and all the resources. They scout and they find talent, and they do. And they've been doing this for a while since they went to the World Series that year against the Phillies and kind of came out of nowhere. They've been pretty solid. Now, I know they've had ups and downs. Every team does, but they've been pretty solid for the last decade.
Yeah.
In how they go about their business.
I mean, look, they get the most out of what they have, more than any other team in Major League Baseball. Now, that's, I mean, you got to have nothing to be able to fit into that category. So I'm not trying to take anything away from the Yankees or the Dodgers or these teams with incredible payrolls. But the Tampa Rays, I mean, it's why hasn't that team ever captured the imagination of Tampa Bay? That's the one thing I've never understood is the lack of fan support that they have. I guess, is it because the star player is always going to leave, and so people just don't want to make the long-term investment in it?
I guess, but it's not like the Marlins, where they win and then tear it down. The Rays haven't torn it down. They just have traded guys off here and there. But really, like, they traded Evan Longoria. Has he really done anything since he left?
Not really.
No. How many of those guys have the Rays given away who've gone on to just dominate other teams? It's not like the Marlins. The Marlins, every one of their guys goes somewhere else and becomes a superstar.
Look at Marcelo Ozuna for the Braves. Yeah.
So it's not like that. But and you would think, you know, if you're the Rays, you don't have basketball. You do have football. And it's always going to be a Buccaneers town, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But why wouldn't you embrace how they – I mean, it is kind of an underdog story. Why wouldn't you embrace that? I don't get it.
Yeah.
I don't get it at all.
I don't either. There's a lot I don't get in sports. As I'm scrolling through, I mean, the Falcons are just like – the Falcons are that cough that won't go away at this point, right? I mean, the Braves, the Bulldogs, big weekend, and you just keep seeing things. It's a headline from the AJC, Arthur Blank noncommittal on Matt Ryan's future. Whoa. All right.
Look,
if you don't trade him, he's the quarterback next year.
Right. You can't dump him.
It will cost you money against the cap that you don't have cap space as it is to cut him. Ryan will be, unless you trade him, Matt Ryan is on your roster next year.
Same with Julio. And I don't know how you even trade Julio.
I think the Falcons are stuck with Julio Jones. I don't think you kill. Again, you said this. You would have to find a team that really feels like they could win the Super Bowl, and they have a major setback at wide receiver with injury.
Right.
Because taking on Julio Jones's contract, I mean, that is – I mean, especially when there's the thought that the cap may go down, I don't think you can trade Julio Jones right now. If you look at his salary – I'm pulling these numbers up right now. Moving forward with his – I mean, again, they never should have given him the contract in the first place. He was 2 years into a five-year deal. If you cut him, he counts against the cap through 2021. So you've got him through next year too. There's an out after the 2022 season. But, I mean, anybody that takes this guy on, you're talking about $60 million in cap space this year, next year, and 2022.
You're going to have to find somebody who will take on that contract.
Yeah. And I don't know that team's out. I mean, it would have to be a team that definitely has a quarterback on a rookie contract that is in contention.
And close. And you know what? You could trade him if you'd have left him on the original contract.
Falcon for life, baby.
Falcon for life. He's going to have to be a Falcon for life because you can't get rid of him.
Hall of Fame player, man. Best receiver in the history of the franchise, but it's about winning championships, and that's a long way away for this team. Not for the Braves, though.
Same thing with the quarterback, too.
Yep. No, the quarterback's in the same spot.
Yep.
No, it's
and the Braves are five wins away from a World Series.
Yeah.
Think about that.
Oh, my God. This is incredible. Last night, I hope this evening is half as fun as
that's
last
not right.
night was.
It's not five. I'm sorry.
Five? No, they're three seven. Wins away from going to the World
seven.
Series. Seven away from winning.
I'm sorry. My math is not good.
You're already counting on the winning the next
year. I'm an English major. They'll be six wins away from a World Series title after tonight.
The Braves are 2.5 wins. No, it's going to be exciting, man. I'm nervous as all get out, excited, giddy. I think the Braves have a real chance. We're out of time. Thanks for listening, as always. The Bill Shank Show live this afternoon at 3. We'll take you right up to the pregame show at 4:50. First pitch shortly after 6 o'clock. Go Braves. For Daniel, I'm Russ. We'll do it again tomorrow at 11. Y'all have a good one.